Day. We've got, you're here today with Ken Gale, and I'm Donna Stein, and this is Ecologic for October 2nd, 2020. When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Nuff said. Environment and the elections. What are we hearing from the candidates? Let's delve into what is, what we can hope for, and what the planet can expect from these candidates' platforms.
I don't hear Ken.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes, but not Ken.
Okay, we're on the air. All right, Ken is going to be back in just a minute. Ecologic's guests today are environmental and social justice blogger Ted Glick and community engagement director at 18 by Vote, Ava Mateo. Ava and Ted, are you with us?
Hi, yes. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
I'm here too.
Oh, great. All right. So Ken just had to step away for a minute. So we're going to continue and he'll be joining us. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Now, we have, I'd like to, right now we want to get into, what did you, everybody listen to the debate?
Yes.
Okay.
I did.
and, you know, right now we have two platforms and, we probably do not have enough of what we want, but we do have something. What we want you to do today is try and evaluate. Why don't you first introduce yourselves? I'm sorry. Ava, explain who you are and where you're from.
Okay, sounds great. So my name's Ava Mateo. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I am the community engagement director at 18 by Vote. 18 by Vote is we're a youth-led, youth-driven nonprofit organization, and we're really committed to increasing civic engagement and civic engagement opportunities among young people. And I'm currently located in Brooklyn, but I am originally from Woodstock, New York. So that kind of comes up in a lot of the work that I do.
Okay. And Ted Glick.
Yes, hi. Yes. Thanks a lot, Donna and Ken. I have been a progressive activist and organizer since the Vietnam War. I have been focused for the last 17 years on the issue of the climate crisis. I work now with the group Beyond Extreme Energy. That's a national group. I work in New Jersey where I live. I live just outside of Newark in the town of Bloomfield. And I work with several groups here in New Jersey. I'm the president of the group 350 New Jersey and Rockland. And I'm a writer. I just had a book published, Burglar for Peace, Lessons Learned in the Catholic Left's Resistance to the Vietnam War. That's about my early years of activism during the Vietnam War. That's me.
What do you think right now? Do we have a choice? Where do you think things are going? Feel free to step in. We want to know what exactly are we hearing from the candidates? What is, first of all, I must say ahead of time that we are a nonpartisan situation. We're not advocating to vote for one side or the other. But our listeners probably know, our stands here. But right now we're talking about the environment and what are we hearing from the candidates? It may not be as much as we want, but what can we hope for and what can the planet expect from these candidates' platforms?
Ava, you want to go first?
Oh, let's go. Sure. I mean, I think that at 18 by Vote, so we really are also a nonpartisan organization. So we're really kind of focus more on educating young people about the impact of voting and the importance of voting and understanding how your vote impacts issues that they may care about, such as climate change. And so climate change is actually one of, is pretty much young people on average is kind of their top priority to be addressed. And so kind of we are focused really on thinking about how to draw the connection between voting and these very important kind of issues of justice and issues that need to be addressed. I mean, I think in terms of the candidates, I think coming from my own personal perspective, rather than representing the organization, I think that it does feel that Biden is really listening to young people, or at least making a big effort to kind of include climate change as a priority. And so that is something that I know I observed. But young people are very focused and very kind of have the Green New Deal as kind of one of their main goals. And a lot of young people really advocate for this. So he's not quite on that. He doesn't, as he said in the debate, that is not something that he supports.
Yeah, and, you know, and underlying everything is what you've said before, is climate activism should not be a should be a nonpartisan issue. All right, Ted.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of similarity in terms of my.
Just hold on. Hold on a second, Ted. We're getting some feedback. So somebody's got to turn off the. I hear you, Mercy. Turn off your background sound.
Oh, you can hear me then.
Yes, we can. Welcome, Ken. All right. All right. So, Ted, you were just going to tell us, say something.
Yes. So I think the beginning point for me, a beginning point, is the reality that Donald Trump is literally just a threat to life on Earth as we know it, all forms of life, not just human beings. His policies environmentally, and particularly when it comes to the climate crisis, like on almost so many other issues, have been just off the charts bad. And he absolutely needs to go if if Earth and its ecosystems are going to have a chance of surviving. We just need to get him out. And there's only one way that's going to happen. I personally, in the past, was active with the Green Party. I'm not anymore. I disagree, frankly, with their electoral strategy. That I agree with a lot of what they stand for. I don't agree with their electoral strategy. So I'm supporting Biden. I think that he is not Bernie Sanders. That's who I supported for a long time. I supported him in 2015 and 2016. I supported him in 2019 and 2020 until Biden basically won. Biden, it's interesting that since that happened, since Biden definitely, you know, it was clearly going to be the winner, it was a positive development that the Biden campaign agreed to set up task forces with Bernie's campaign, people mm-hmm. from his campaign, to develop common approaches on issues, a number of issues, and one of them was the climate. And there was movement on Biden's part and his campaign's part during that period. So that, for example, Biden agreed, and this was a change in what he had been saying, you know, before this point. He agreed that if he's elected, that he'll go for $2 trillion to be used to get a real serious shift going away from fossil fuels to renewable energy. He committed to wanting to have the electricity grid, all electricity in the United States, be coming from renewable energy by 2035. He had had it at 2050 before. So there's other things that he's saying. I think the key thing is that he's on the right side, even if he's definitely not as strong as I wish he was. But he's also giving indications that he's listening to people who have stronger positions and is taking them seriously. So he's, I think he's the best option we have. No question about it. In fact, I think it's critical that people turn out in big numbers and also work to get people in battleground states. Sign up to do outreach to people in battleground states. That's very key. That's kind of where I am.
Yeah. According to a conservative email I got, Trump is signing up or is registering more voters in battleground states than Biden is. That doesn't seem to bode well as far as Biden goes.
I've not heard that. Well, I don't know where that comes from.
I got it from a conservative organization that I get email from. I don't want to mention their name on the air. They don't deserve
it. They're just being rah rah.
They're reciting numbers.
I read a great meme yesterday. I want to quote: "Voting isn't marriage; it's public transport. You're not voting for the one. You're getting on the bus, and if there isn't one going exactly to your destination, you don't stay home and sulk. You take the one that's going closest to where you want to be." Is that fabulous?
That's fantastic. And it's totally true. There's a lot of youth groups that are really encouraging their peers, because a lot of young people were, again, speaking from myself, my own personal understanding, a lot of young people were definitely very disappointed, as I think we all saw, with Joe Biden being chosen. However, I think that, yeah, that's kind of, it's really getting young people to understand the importance of voting and how they can really it is tied in completely to things that they care about and things that will impact the rest of their lives, such as the climate. And these things are not exactly, as you said before, Donna, these are not partisan issues. But at this point, there are certain candidates who are acknowledging things and others who are not. So it's definitely, but there's a really interesting, there's some accounts on Instagram, for example, that kind of are advocating for young people to, again, commit to voting and to voting for someone who they feel is representing them. So, for example, one of them is called Settle for Biden, which is an interesting way to say it.
One of the things I liked most about the debate was mentioning of weatherization. I was quite surprised to hear that, because that's not a sexy topic, but it's one of the most important things that can be done to get us out of this climate crisis. So I was glad to hear that. And it's a big jobs issue, too. I'm surprised that Republicans haven't adopted it as well.
Yeah, this is Ted. I agree that was important. Actually, it was a surprise to me, and I think a lot of other people, that Chris Wallace asked the questions that he did and even made the points that he did about climate. That was not scheduled from his standpoint to be part of the agenda for the issues of the debate. And so that was, I think, a good development. I know there was a lot of pressure. There were organized efforts by climate activists around the country to put pressure on Chris Wallace to include climate. And all of a sudden, there he did it. So that was good. And so, you know, Trump did his thing there, as he did all throughout the debate, of trying to just kind of talk over everything and just have it be a total mess, you know, chaos, President Chaos. That's literally who he is, President Chaos. He did
like that.
But Biden, you know, was able to get a number of good points out. One new development just in the last few days that I've seen is, and again, this is in response to pressure that people have been putting on, he has come out with a statement saying, let me just read it here, it's just one sentence. It has to do with people who he would be appointing to, you know, positions of leadership if he's elected. He says, that the statement says that from the campaign, Biden aims to ensure that those who serve in his campaign, that those who serve are aligned with his values and policy priorities and have not, for example, been leaders at fossil fuel or private prison companies, unquote. That's a Biden campaign statement identifying fossil fuel leaders with private prison leaders. So that's a good sign in terms of what's happening right now with Biden and the people around him, that we have to just keep pushing and working to kind of keep that going. So, you know, there's some good signs. Just one thing on the Green New Deal that was raised earlier. It's you know, Biden has been a little, frankly, wishy-washy on the Green New Deal from what I've seen. He actually does say at one point his climate plan that was released in June, he actually called the Green New Deal a, quote, crucial framework, unquote. He didn't, like, just dismiss it.
He did disavow it on the debate, but I think that was more of an attempt to appeal to the middle.
Yeah, no. He definitely said that he's not about the Green New Deal. He's about the Biden deal or the Biden plan. But, you know, he's a little wishy-washy on that. Same thing actually with fracking. I mean, he's not against fracking. He's not calling for a ban on fracking. He's calling for, you know, maybe trying to do more to stop methane from leaking and banning fracking on federal land. It's not the position at all that I support. We definitely need a ban on fracking for sure. But, you know, again, we have to keep working and pushing. That's what, the way I see it.
Yeah. I definitely think that it's in the election process, he needs to appeal to the middle, to all sides. I'm hoping that, well, we certainly will have more of an influence over one man over the other. So,
Yes, going back to the debate, something that I saw that was interesting is that with Wallace, a moderator has never actually asked a question about the climate before.
Yeah.
The questions had always come from kind of deciding voters or people in the audience. So I think that alone has shown some progress on where kind of our collective understanding is in terms of the climate, and that this is something that we clearly need to be addressing. From all perspectives and from all parties. So I thought that was a good change and a good shift in our general dialogue.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm getting from both Ted and Ava, this is Ken, is you've got optimism about the future of the country. And I didn't expect that from wanting to do a show right after the debate about the election. And here you are, you guys being all optimistic. That's great.
Yeah, well, personally, I found the work that I'm doing, I work with a lot of young people and young people across the country, and really specifically young people within the ages of 14 and 19. And the thing that I have found the most incredible about this experience working with these young people is that they are incredibly positive and incredibly driven to make a difference, and really kind of aren't bogged down by the state of the world. They're really kind of like, this is our chance. We need to do what we can and make our voices heard and really kind of share our perspectives. And I think that has really kind of helped me stay positive in these crazy times. So that's been incredible.
Yeah, that's good to hear, Eva. That's definitely really good to hear. I've been following things closely, very closely, for months and months and months, and doing different kinds of work, writing and otherwise, to try to yield some positive results, after Election Day. I see that if you try to look at things very objectively, in terms of the race between Biden and Trump, there's no question but that Biden absolutely is in the lead. He's been at a steady, in terms of national polls, like between 6, 7, 8 percentage point lead for at least 3 months now. That's been very steady. on it's closer in the battleground states. Again, that's why the work to mobilize the vote in battleground states is absolutely critical. And people can do that. They can sign up with a lot of different groups. You know, you can sign up with the Biden campaign. There's a group Indivisible, Our Revolution. Bernie's group is working on this. There's lots of others. Center for Popular Democracy. Many groups are working to get people to mobilize that vote in the battleground states. But you know, there's another thing is in terms. I read just a couple days ago that when it comes to people who asking for absentee ballots, mail-in ballots in the states where you need to ask to do that. In some states, like New Jersey, you just get them automatically. Now, this year, that's a new thing. But in states where you need to ask to get a mail-in ballot, the number of Democrats versus Republicans asking is like 3-1. I mean, it's like this huge disparity. And Republican campaign people are like really worried about that, because ordinarily it's just the opposite. Ordinarily Republicans outnumber Democrats in terms of absentee, you know, ballot requests. So I've also, you know, seen almost anecdotally, it's not like I've really studied it, but I've definitely seen that when early voting opened up in a number of states, I guess about a week and a half or so ago, there were what I read was that, again, a majority, and wasn't like a slim majority, a majority of the people who voted were Democrats doing the early voting, and that includes some of the battleground states. So there are definite signs that if this keeps, we just keep building and keep the momentum going, we can win, and maybe we can win pretty decisively and take back, end Republican control of the Senate as well as the White House. That's possible. That is definitely possible from everything I see.
Well, I've got to say that is a great note to end this half-hour segment of the show. This is amazing that time has flown by again. there's always more information than time. But don't worry, everybody, because as you can hear more discussion on our webpage, we are not live, so you'll hear it in about a week and a half. But if you subscribe to our newsletter, you will be informed of when it goes live. But this discussion will be extended. So those of you who are online, you can go to www.ecoradio.org.
Yeah, there's environmental news there on a variety of topics. There's connections to past shows, past episodes of Ecologic. There's a lot of information, a lot of things you can do. And you can sign up for our mailing list. There's a little blurb toward the top of the website. And we'll let you know when the extended versions go online.
And real quick, if Ava and Kay, you can just give your websites that people can hear just quickly. Ava,
yeah,
your website?
I'll go ahead. Our website is just www.18by.vote. And so that's where you can find all of our information. We would love for people to support us. So thank you.
And the link will be on ecoradio.org. Ted?
Yeah, mine is just myname.com. So Ted Glick, GLICK.com. You can find lots of stuff there.
Okay. Ken, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to ask Ava to repeat the website because
okay. Well,
We don't have time.
You'll have to go to ecoradio.org, folks. Our listeners know that we have something that belongs to you guys, our listeners. This listener-sponsored radio station is yours. We want you to own it. You do own it. We want you to support it and own it. Now we need you to show your responsibility and your love for WBAI radio and your favorite show, or at least one of them, we hope, that's Ecologic. You have choices on how you can keep us on the air. You can go to the www.give2wbai.org website to get any one or more of our terrific premiums by putting eco-logic in the search box in the upper right corner. Or what would be much appreciated is to become our buddy. Just go to www.give2wbai.org on the BAI Buddy page, and on the drop-down box, click on Ecologic and pledge a monthly amount, any amount. Think of what this show is worth to you. You have our sincere thanks.
And big thanks to our wonderful engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Donna Stein. See you next Friday at 2:30 p.m.
Thank you, Ava and Ted.
Thank you.
For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. President Donald Trump is experiencing mild symptoms of COVID-19 after revealing early this morning that he and First Lady Melania Trump have tested positive for coronavirus. Trump's physician, Sean Conley, said he expected the president to carry out his duties without disruption while he recovers. Trump is 74 years old and overweight, with elevated blood pressure, putting him at higher risk of serious complications from the virus. His positive test results raises questions about his ability to hold rallies, fundraisers, and to participate in presidential debates scheduled later this month. If Trump becomes seriously ill, there are constitutional procedures that would allow Vice President Mike Pence to assume power temporarily. Depending on when Trump was first exposed, dozens of people may be at risk. Trump has repeatedly downplayed the risks of the virus, and he and his staff often do not wear masks. At this week's debate, Trump even mocked Joe Biden for wearing masks so often. Trump stood only feet away from Biden at the Tuesday debate, where multiple members of Trump's entourage declined to wear masks despite requests from the staff hosting the event. Biden reportedly tested negative for COVID-19 today. He intends to continue on with his campaign schedule. The U.S. recorded another 46,000 cases of coronavirus Thursday and nearly 850 deaths, raising the official U.S. death toll to 208,000. Hours of grand jury proceedings were made public today in the case of Breonna Taylor's fatal shooting by police, a rare release of such material. The jury brought no criminal charges against the officers for her killing, angering many in Louisville and around the country, and setting off renewed protests. Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron, a Republican and the state's first African-American Attorney General, has acknowledged that he did not recommend homicide charges for the officers involved. Police used a narcotics warrant to enter Taylor's Louisville apartment on March 13th and shot her after Taylor's boyfriend fired at them. Taylor, a 26-year-old emergency medical worker, was shot five times. Police found no drugs. CNN has released audio recordings of First Lady Melania Trump in 2018, dismissing the harm of separating asylum-seeking families at the U.S.-Mexico border. Stephanie Winston Wolkoff recorded the comments while working on her book, Melania and Me, about her relationship with the First Lady.
You know, who gives a f*** about Christmas stuff and decoration, but I need to do it, right?
Yeah, but 100%. You have no choice.
And okay, and then I do it, and I say that I'm working on Christmas, planning for the Christmas, and they said, oh, what about the children that they were separated? Give me a break. Where they were saying anything when Obama did that?
Vice News reports police in Pearland, Texas, requested the presence of Border Patrol snipers at George Floyd's burial on June 9th and gave them permission to use deadly force as members of the militarized tactical unit known as BORTAC surveilled funeral attendees. Records obtained by Vice also reveal an FBI surveillance aircraft was flown over the burial to monitor for so-called violent agitators. That day, at least six snipers